Election 2016.
Hello, I'm Roger Waterson. Garth, with its new boundaries and an increase from one to two members in the House of Keys, is the focus of our attention today. In this Manx Radio's 2016 debate, we shall meet in person four of the candidates for the constituency and hear a recorded contribution from the fifth. In live discussion, we shall discover their aims and objectives, views and priorities, and explore their vision for the future of the Isle of Man in the next 5 years and beyond. And the voters in Garth have a choice of five candidates, and the two with the highest votes obviously will represent the constituency for the next 5 years. Four out of the five are with me today. They are photographer Andrew Barton, civil servant Daphne Kane, precision engineering and aerospace company director Martin Perkins, and accountant Andrew Smith. And the fifth cannot be with us because he's of a long-standing commitment, cannot be here today. That's Nigel Dobson, and he's left a recorded message. Now, we'll meet them in a few minutes, but first we'll hear from our happy wanderer, John Moss, as he takes a tangential look at the Keys constituency of Garth.
And so to Garth, the meandering constituency which wanders along the eastern coast from just north of Douglas to a gnat's from Ramsey. Indeed, Ramsey forms its northern edge. Its rocky buffers repel the Irish Sea. It greets the sunrise. It enjoys views of the adjoining island and the wind turbines. It has goats. But there's an important new element after the boundary changes, and that's the slither of Onchan in the shadow of the heights of Housetrake that are now included in Garth. Let's have a look at the statistics. A total population for the constituency of 6,710. This is going back to the 2011 census. Of that, 2,141 are in the Onchan Housetrake district and 354 in Onchan Parish. Laxey, the village, has 1,705. We've already heard calls for a name change to reflect the importance of Onchan in this new political area. Well, what about Gonchan? Or Oncarf? It's only a small area, the Onchan bit, but will it wag the dog? Well, that's a tussle for later on. Let's have a look at this largely rural giant. It was once the home to unwilling sea lions, used as an attraction at the far end of the Groudle Glen Railway. They do have seals still, they patrol its coast. But returning to transport, Garth has a plethora of ancient transport. There's the Groudle Glen Railway, the Snaefell Mountain Railway, which crosses over its western border to start the climb up Snaefell, and the Manx Electric Railway, running its entire length. The cost of keeping the MER, in particular, in working order, comes up from time to time. Then we have the bridge at Laxey. It's now nearing completion, the new one, though there have been moans about how long it's taking. It was a casualty of the winter floods. The constituency has been the best model example of local authorities coming together, a threesome that does appear to be working, and is cited as an example that other areas may care to follow. There's a fine new statue to a miner in Laxey, but there's not a lot minor about Garth's political heritage. Sir Charles Carouche, MHK, Speaker and President. Steve Roden, MHK from 1995 and now President. The two members who step up to the plate will have big, big shoes to follow. Is it going to be a close-run thing? Will there be a last Garth victory? What voters hear this evening may swing it one way or another, so no pressure, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, the changed constituency of Garth, they're seen through the eyes of John Moss. Now, all of these constituency programmes begin the same way, with an invitation to each of the candidates to talk to us for a maximum of 1.5 minutes, uninterrupted, on any topic of their choice. However, if they run over that allotted time, I'll stop them and move on to the next. We'll meet them in alphabetical order, which means that we'll start today's proceedings with Andrew Barton.
I am a general practice high street photographer. My business is based in Douglas and I'm a licentiate of the British Institute of Professional Photography and a licentiate master photographer. I am married to Diane and live in Glenmona. The next 5 years are likely to be turbulent and challenging, economically and socially. So the next administration needs to be united, ambitious, entrepreneurial, swift to adapt to new economic realities. It must also be closer and more sensitive to the people it serves. As a local businessman for more than 20 years and an Isle of Man resident for 26 years, I believe I understand what matters to the people here. I also believe I can bring insight and experience and a willingness to challenge the status quo to that next administration. There will be many new faces in the next government, and with your support, I hope to be among those new faces. I want to contribute towards a united body of men and women in Tynwald with a shared vision to form positive links with those whom we have been elected to serve. to deliver long-term economic growth and create an enabling environment for a better civil society. I am, however, mindful that all I say and do to win your support is set against an uncertain background. The next administration will have to redouble its efforts to balance its budgets, drive economic growth, foster a more caring society, and secure its role in a global market faced with geopolitical instability. I would make immediate efforts to grow the economy and the population, to progress the promenade improvements at the earliest opportunity, improve the appearance of the island and its road infrastructure, and grow all our industries from finance to farming, from tourism to e-gaming. Industry and income is pivotal to our island's progress and survival.
Right, thank you, Andrew. And now to Daphne Kane.
Hello, I am Daphne Kane, and I want to do everything possible to ensure the Isle of Man has a positive future. I think we need to stop being so defensive about what we are. It is an achievement to be a well-regulated, low-tax jurisdiction, raising our own revenue and providing services for our people. The Isle of Man is a great place to live, a wonderful holiday destination, and a good place to do business. But we need to promote all aspects more positively in a more cohesive way. Alongside that, we need to address what is holding us back. There has been a lack of openness in government. Sometimes it moves too slowly or seemingly cuts the wrong things. We need to meet head-on the challenges of post-Brexit negotiations to ensure our future trading agreements with Europe. The focus now must also be on growing the economy and attracting new residents to work here in diverse jobs. With a large exodus from the previous government, who are not seeking re-election, the Isle of Man has a great opportunity next week to vote in candidates who will bring fresh ideas and creative thinking to the world's oldest parliament. I am aware of the huge task ahead. Through the next 5 years, we must promote our strengths, the island's autonomy, its natural beauty and relative security. We must listen, communicate and innovate. That is what I'm ready to do. I would like to be part of the solution, and I will work for a positive future if elected to serve the people of Garth.
Right, well, thank you, Daphne. That was Daphne Kane. Nigel Dobson cannot be with us today because of a long-standing offshore commitment. But before he left, he recorded this contribution.
Hi, my name's Nigel Dobson. I live in Onchan. My business is based in Baldrine. I've spent 20 years on the island now, living in the Garth region. I'm chairman of the Garth Commissioners, which was formed in May of this year, and was a member of the London Commissioners, twice chairman, for 9 years prior to that. I believe that we are at a crossroads in the Isle of Man and that we have an opportunity of change. There's going to be a huge change in this House, with up to a dozen new members, and it's a time to perhaps change the way we do things. GB funding is in crisis. Noble's Hospital morale is incredibly low. We have a modern fleet of buses, the envy of Europe, and yet we have a 13-month waiting list to go to the acute pain clinic. This is all wrong. We need to change the way we do things. We start by going to zero budgeting so that departments don't feel they have to spend money because they won't get it next time. They are allocated funds on their genuine need year to year. This is an opportunity to change the way we do things, to have a new start, to work smarter, not harder. I apologise for not being here. I'm away at my son's wedding. I would love to be here, but family will always come first. I look forward to seeing you all on my return, hopefully as a successful MHK.
That was Nigel Dobson. Now it's time for us to turn to Martin Perkins.
Thank you. I'm director of a precision engineering company manufacturing aerospace components. Our parts are flying around the world on Airbus aircraft and in many helicopters. I've experienced business both in the good times and the bad times, competing against low-cost countries such as India and China. In the past, I've had to make some hard decisions leading to severe cutbacks in the company, and then also go out and find work to keep us in business. In busy times, we've all had to pull together and work round the clock to satisfy our customers' requirements. I'm the chairman, deputy chairman of the Chamber of Commerce Engineering and Manufacturing Committee, who work closely with the government DED on waste, skills, energy and technology, and also the Awareness of Careers in Engineering, the ACE project, in schools. If elected, my priority on a national level is getting new business to the island and get that economy back on track. This is the only way we're going to be able to pay for the health service, the schools, the police and the public sector pensions black hole. Brexit has brought us many threats and unknowns, but above all, it's got to be a wake-up call for us to go out worldwide, bring in new business, create new opportunities and jobs on the island. We've got to start now. We just can't wait for the UK. We must create a can-do attitude with everybody on the island contributing. I believe my industrial experience over the years has given me the tools, the insight and determination and some fresh industrial thinking to contribute to the way in which the Isle of Man government addresses local, national and international issues.
All right, thank you, Martin Perkins. Now, Andrew Smith, please.
Thanks, Roger. I'm Andrew Smith, 62, and married to Alwyn, with two daughters and two grandsons. A resident of Laxey since my arrival on the island from Yorkshire in 1986, I served on the board of Laxey Village Commissioners from 1992 to 2001, holding the office of chairman in 1996, 97, 98, 99 and 2000 to 2001. My feet have always been firmly fixed within the constituency of Garth, and at the time of devolution of funding to schools, I was the first community governor of Laxey School. My support of culture and heritage and the wider local community is well documented. I have had a key role in organising Laxey Fair since 2003 and regularly support Laxey and London Heritage Trust and the various churches throughout Garth. An accountant by profession, I have worked within the agricultural, banking, construction, fund, insurance, oil and gas, shipping and yacht and aircraft industries. I was also employed by Isle of Man Government Treasury Financial Services Division from 1997 to 2008. During that tenure, I was responsible for promoting the Isle of Man abroad. We have a positive and national identity, one that is well known, and we should be proud of that. I'm currently a business associate at Ferry Cottage Filling Station, supporting Ruby Midgeall, who is celebrating 50 years. It remains the only independent filling station on the Isle of Man.
Right. Well, thank you, Andrew. And there we are. We've heard from all our candidates today for the constituency of Garth, and now it's time for us to get down and talk about some of the issues that are of concern to them and perhaps of concern to the constituents within Garth. And perhaps we've finished with you there, Andrew, with your introduction. But looking at your manifesto amongst those of us around the table here today, you've got one element perhaps amongst the others of doom and gloom, which is perhaps not there in some of the other ones. And where you've said actually that you think that we have, as a nation, inherited debt and disillusionment hitherto unknown. What did you mean by that?
Well, I believe that obviously the debt situation, as we mentioned, both in the government sector, pensions issues, and also various other areas, together with what I hear on the doorstep, the people that are totally demoralised and not interested in politics whatsoever. Sometimes you'll be speaking to people and you've actually got to try and convince them to get them back on track to be involved and to come to vote, because to make them understand that their viewpoint is exceptionally important in the current situation that we find ourselves. So that's really the disillusionment that I'm talking about.
Have you found the same sort of thing, Daphne?
I think people are very engaged. I think people want to see change, and they accept that there are faults in previous years' administration, where in the recent 5 years, perhaps we don't agree with all the cuts that have been made, but there is a great understanding that we must grow the economy to be able to afford the services that we want to provide in the future. But there's no point bringing all those businesses and companies to the Isle of Man if then the manufacturing ones have an issue that we haven't negotiated our Brexit strategy and they can't export them to Europe. Mm. So I think people generally know it's crunch time and they're looking for innovative ideas to get us out of this mess.
If you look at the social services attitude survey, only 43% of the public had any confidence in government. 75% believed that government didn't have any clear objectives. And that is exactly reflected what I'm finding on the doorstep. People are very disillusioned.
Yet the government of the past 5 years, Andrew, it's had to cope with all sorts of problems and all sorts of issues that we never envisaged in the previous 5 years. So is this, do you think, just a kickback reaction to the cuts and to the austerity, or is it there's something deeper there?
I think that people have got confused with the delays in decision making and the non-uniformity from in sort of a cohesive plan of doing anything, and the delays with everything, that's the main issues. And people have got so some people are just saying they're going to go down and spoil the paper, which seems very, very bad. And I just would like, I've tried to say that if they should vote, because it makes a big difference, and the government previously, I think, has lost contact.
Well, what are they expecting then? Daphne says they're expecting some sort of leadership, some sort of guidance. Is this the case? Are they putting forward what they want to see, or are they looking for something from you as a candidate?
They're wanting openness, I think. They're wanting government to be open about where they're going and what they've done right and wrong. And I think the disconnect is because people have stopped believing what government say.
I think they want to see clear funding in frontline services. They've all seen the cutbacks, and they've faced cutbacks at the hospital and various other local government issues, and they feel that the government just isn't behind public services.
And when you see a clear fund or clear policies, and you say in your manifesto as well, Andrew, you talk about priority budgeting. What's that?
Yeah, well, priority budgeting is that, say, no budget. When you look at government, it's departments and ministers competing for funds. That's how government is generally made up. So you've got a situation that you cannot ring fence budgets. It's got to have this, like Nigel mentioned in his recording, you've got to have this zero budgeting process, because if DOI, for argument's sake, has a surplus at the end of the year and health needs money, then that money should be readily available for health and not just be spent willy-nilly irresponsibly on a DOI project that just to spend it. So the thing is that we cannot no longer go down the ring fencing of budgets, and even capital projects should not be ring fenced.
Did you not say earlier you had worked in the Treasury at one
yes.
time? So the pitching process, therefore, yes. is designed to prevent some of that, isn't it? So that the departments get the money they need.
It is, to a certain extent, but there are obviously ways around that as well. So you do have to pitch all the time. You've got to fight your corner. And the thing is that it's not right and it's not moral in these days that we can spend irresponsibly in some departments when health is in severe need.
Well, Andrew, how would you, as you said in yours, how would you reprioritise government spending? How would you do it?
Well, I think that if we just take road infrastructure as a particular one, I think that certain budget balancing has taken place by withdrawing basic maintenance, and they're getting to a point now where they're not going to get any better by themselves. We're not going to stop using them. We need to keep maintaining them in order to keep us moving, and I think that is a false economy, and I think the budgets need to be put straight back into to maintaining that, and that's not just talking about promenade, that's talking about the wider roads.
When you say reprioritise, you're saying virtually the same as yes. the other Andrew here, mm. and that is that the whole method of government budgeting should change.
Yeah, I think.
But do we not follow, Daphne, do we not follow the same system as other governments do?
We do. We're not as open. One of the constituents actually turned around to me on Sunday and showed the link to New Zealand. They've one of the most open budgeting processes in the world. And it's how it's perceived. And I don't agree that you necessarily have to have zero budgeting. I think we need to have a bit of humanity and sympathy when coming to the decision. I think this last administration has had to face an enormous amount of cuts, but everything applied across the board and every department having to cut from the bottom isn't necessarily what the Isle of Man wants in terms of delivering the services. So we need to find efficiencies in the system. We need to make the health service more efficient, but not cut the frontline services, maybe deliver them differently.
It does seem sometimes to be a feeling that the cuts are visited upon the public and not on the department itself. Is that any truth in that feeling?
I think everybody's feeling the cuts.
Yeah, I think there's...
If you follow what I'm getting at, in other words, the pain's not all evenly spread.
No.
And I think there's a lot of middle management that could do with close examination. The way they've brought the consultants in, they've looked at the front-end services and got rid of those, or reduced them drastically, but completely taken the eye off the ball on the middle management. And looking in from outside, it appears that nobody's got the gumption to be able to prune out some of the dead wood that we clearly have. But I also think there's the communication and consultation between departments needs examining, because, you know, we've seen examples, for example, the Power 8. The public perceives that one department has sabotaged another. And this is the feedback that the public that I'm getting from the public on the street, which is putting politicians in bad light.
So what about a single entity government then? What do you think about that? I mean, that's a discussion that has been wafting about now for this last 2 years, where it is felt that the departments are all legal entities and they're all right, and government isn't one. It's about time we made the changes. Do you think it's time we had a central entity of government that deals with everything and fewer ministers?
Fewer ministers, definitely. I mean,
I would think fewer ministers. If you say fewer departments, the only thing is, if you say fewer departments, it means that something has got to grow even bigger. And we've experienced in recent days that the bigger the department's got, the more inefficient it's got, and therefore people are even worse off than they were when we started the restructure. So the scope and government that we went through a few years ago, I don't believe has actually worked in it the way it should have worked, because they've still got this silo mentality.
So if you were elected then, Andrew, and I'll ask this to all of you, if whichever one of you, or every two of you, are successful in being elected, what do you think you could do to change this situation, this central silo mentality, whatever title you want to put on it, make the change that's necessary? What would you do, Andrew?
Well, I think that we need to pull as a team. Everybody has got to work together, and we should have a marketing plan and a marketeer, I thought, that is based in government, not a company, not an outside agency, not a consultancy, but a person who we can, departments can actually channel their marketing throughout locally, nationally and internationally as one great big story. And I think then that it would bring us, the departments, together. And I just think that last time the government hasn't worked together as a team. I mean, health is something that people are talking about cutting back, as a ward closed and so forth. And we can't afford to allow that to happen. We need to get that growing, because if we're going to grow our economy and our population, we need our health infrastructure to be...
It's not just about marketing, though, is it? It's not... You've got to get the policies right and the structure of government right, and then you promote what's good about the Isle of Man, and you back that up by having the light touch regulation, the easy open door to get into government and speak to the people you need to speak to that can make things happen and facilitate businesses setting up here.
But if you have nine ministers in the Council of Ministers, then all working from a different policy, then it's...
But they should be working the same policy. And also, if the Chief Minister follows Lord Lisvain's suggestion in his recommendations that they announce a programme for government annually, and then they follow that up by annual updates, tweaks where they need to change the policy, providing the Council of Ministers and any department members are signed up to that programme for government, it should make sure that people do work cohesively for the greater good of the Isle of Man.
I think we've got an ideal opportunity this time, because we're going to see a big sea change in Manx politics with the new members that were in there, and they have no allegiances, no alliances to anybody, so we're a good opportunity to actually make a difference.
But no experience as well.
But in fairness, not no experience, some experience, but of different levels. And it's all about working as a team. So therefore, we've got everything to contribute, and the whole, therefore, will be a lot better.
Yet, Alan Bell, when he first went in the last 5 years ago, he had this wonderful phrase of government of national unity. Well, that didn't last long, did it?
I think the MHKs have got to get right behind whoever is chief minister. And they have to set the policy within the department and not micromanage the detail. That's up to the civil servants. Their job is to motivate the civil servants to cooperate and communicate what they're doing to the public and work together with all the departments across the board.
Now, Alan Bell, in the news you just heard now, made some reference to candidates campaigning. And one of the issues he raised was the VAT issue with the United Kingdom, which is not mentioned, as far as you can see, by hardly any candidate. Now, I think part of that reference is due to the fact that if the UK feels that it's heading for some sort of recession, VAT will be cut over there, maybe to 15%, with a considerable knockdown effect on our economy. Yeah, so 80, what, if that happens, let's look at that. What would we do with that one? How would you handle that one?
Well, if it was cut because it's going to benefit the UK economy by stimulating growth, who's to say it couldn't have the same impact here? And I think they found that when, for instance, the VAT was cut on domestic property repairs in the Isle of Man and it was reduced to 5%, the income from the VAT returns that they had for that kind of work increased. So it's not always a bad thing to reduce the rate.
Yeah, but it would reduce the immediate revenue.
It would
even further.
Well, you could have a separate Isle of Man purchase tax that topped it up. I don't recommend that, but we could obviously have a look at that. It may be a possibility, because if you look at the American scenario, they have a federal tax and each state has a state tax on top of it. And it's particularly annoying when you buy an article, you find there's another 12 cents tax on what you're buying.
Without a disadvantage.
Well, that's right. And I think it needs looking at, though, because if we're going to lose a massive amount of 5% of our VAT revenue, how are we going to replace it?
Surely the period that they're going to reduce it by would be a player on this issue.
No, it'll be immediate. I think you'll find it'll be, when they announce it in the autumn statement, it'll be
term of it.
Almost immediate.
So, well, what I'm really saying to you is that what is the plans? I mean, there are no contingency plans, are there, for any of these things? And I notice, Andrew, you raised the issue of contingency planning and contingency work. I think you used...
Because I think, as I say, any country, any government...
Contingency forecasting, you said.
Yes, it's got to run like a responsible household. I mean, if you've got a holiday fund, right, and your roof starts to leak, you don't still go on holiday and let the roof continue leaking. You prioritise your own budget, and it's exactly the same here. We need to have contingencies, we need to have reserves, and also, unfortunately, the reserves have dwindled dramatically. So therefore, we no longer are in a privileged position to be able to support ourselves should we have to take a further hit on VAT, because we haven't got the reserves to do it as we used to have.
You've still got over £1 billion in reserves.
Well, I know, but so look how that look. You could spend that overnight.
If you're looking at
the UK, and don't forget, it's not just a case of saying looking at the reserve. You've got to see how long those reserves will physically last with other contingencies that are bound to crop up. Because VAT is not the only one.
And what's going out one end, what's coming in the other side of it? Of course, because the reserves have actually gone up slightly just lately.
I think they have. And also the point of the reserves is to carry us through the rainy day. If we had the rainy day, they should be used. But if the reduction in VAT is to stimulate growth, then that's what the Isle of Man wants to do, and we can't be out of sync with that. We're already perceived as an expensive place to visit. The Isle of Man needs to deliver quality and good value, and that's how we can promote ourselves as a better destination.
Well, if we're going to do this, and if we're going to grow the economy, this is a phrase that every candidate says, we're going to grow the economy, but I'm still waiting for most of them to find out how they're going to do it. So on that basis, growing the economy, Martin, you particularly mentioned in your manifesto in relation to that business-friendly legislation. We need business-friendly legislation, you said. Is it not friendly already?
I don't think so. I mean, I've heard of businesses coming here and having problems opening a bank account. And, you know, that's unbelievable in this day and age. But because of our financial services regulations and the money laundering regulations, it's not easy. And that's the sort of thing that puts people off. I know it's a minor thing, but it just niggles people. Mm. And we have to sort that out. We have to sort out the work permit situation, because if people are going to come with good companies, they're going to need a number of work permits to get the thing off the ground. And then hopefully, once it's actually established, they can start employing Manx workers and training them up. And for example, the internet gaming, you know, we put the best regulations we possibly could, and we've now got a world-class organisation in the internet gaming companies. And that's the sort of thing we've got to do for other industries.
You mentioned economic growth in your manifesto, Andrew Barton. What did you imagine, or what did you believe that you would be able to do to help that?
Well, I think that we need to grow our economy across the board. Finance industry is going to stay stagnant or the same pretty much as it is today. Maybe some little bit of growth here and there and a little bit of fluctuation. But an e-gaming, well, there's a few less licenses here, but that's going to fluctuate as well. But we need to harness our old traditional staples like the farming and above all tourism. We need to get that all up and running with a bit of an aggressive stance with marketing. I've heard on the doorstep that people pick up a daily newspaper and they can see adverts for just about everywhere, but nothing saying about the Isle of Man, and we need to get that message out that we are here. And because I think people have forgotten that this is a possibility. And I've heard it said that, yes, what, cheaper to go to the Lake District. And yes, that's probably true if you take off the travelling. But it's not just that. We've got thousands of square foot of office space available, and we need to attract off-island business here. And the 20% tax that they pay on these landlords on this empty office, if they can get a UK company in there, perhaps we can actually incentivize them by allowing them to have cheaper.
Well, maybe we can come back to the issue of tourism in a moment, because it's time now for a short commercial break. We'll be back in 3 minutes with more from the candidates of Gough.
Manx Radio's 2016 election coverage.
Today's 2016 election debate features the candidates for the constituency of Gough with its new boundaries. The candidates are Andrew Smith, Martin Perkins, Daphne Kane, Andrew Barton, and also Nigel Dobson. We were talking a bit about tourism when we went into the break, and Andrew was talking about the need to improve the tourism. Andrew, in your manifesto, you use the words reimagine our tourist industry. What did you mean by that?
Well, for instance, the product we're offering hasn't really changed in the last 5 or even 10 years, and I think we could look at it's the hotels have stayed. There's five major ones on the promenade here. We've lost a lot of our outlying areas, so we've already reimagined them towards a self-catering attraction. We need to, make the Isle of Man more approachable for travel, mainly by sea and for holidays. I would imagine most people would want to come by car. And I think we need to look at attracting people to with deals with the steam packets. So because many people will find that they've booked the accommodation, but then when they look at the travel, it becomes prohibitively expensive, dissuasion to come. So I think we need to perhaps look at the boat is often travelling out of season with spare capacity, and the incentives could be offered.
Well, tourism once upon a time, together with agriculture, was the main industry of the island, and one of its great advantages was all the people came, spent their money, and then they went home again. We didn't have to worry about housing or health or education.
But
or
they might be the
anything.
Business people that come here for a holiday and then.
Well, I think that's what we've got to do, attract a business, and then they come back with their families. And, you know, I say everybody's got to help each other on the island. Let's go and look up all our old relatives and get them coming over, our friends coming over. Come and enjoy the quality of life.
I think a lot of people stay here after they've...
I think people are putting the money where their mouth is. I mean, the new Manin Hotel is absolutely fantastic, and that's a great investment in tourism going forward.
But we've still lost a lot of hotels.
Yeah, but the Mount Murray is now coming back on stream with a local owner who's renovating it and restoring it. I think the Isle of Man has a fantastic tourism product. I would say that. I worked in tourism for 10 years. I think the difference now compared with 10 years ago is that we seem to have lost the gloss. We had the film industry. We had a huge amount of old hotels who perhaps have gone, and we've got modern ones in their place. We need to fill those hotels, and then more people would invest in the tourism industry to attract them here.
I think one thing that we've got is that the steam packet deals are out of kilter with the hotels. So people come to the hotels from Sunday to Saturday or Saturday to Saturday.
That's kind of what I was saying.
And the steam packet is offering a 3-day or a 5-day deal. So I think they should work in alignment, you know, with the... Just as they used to do with, I don't know, was it Magic Holidays or something, where steam packet working across.
The 5-day deal, there was a letter in the paper about it just the last week saying, actually, your 5-day deal on the steam packet to get the reduced rate, so to get a better price for visiting, is preventing us spending money on your island because we're travelling on day one and day five, so we're only spending for three days. So that definitely needs looking at.
And it's like EasyJet, although it's cheap flights, you've got to book a hotel because you can't rely on it. What an example that is for them.
But tourism at one time was a major industry, and it seems to have been relegated as time goes by until now it's tucked up the back end of the Department of Economic Development. Would any of you see that coming back in full force as maybe another another new department or a more upmarket division of a different one?
I think it's got to be made up more upmarket. And the thing I've walked into on the doorstep is people saying that, for example, the end-to-end, they used to have a little mini budget. I think it's £5,000, somebody mentioned. It's a drop in a bucket. It'll get you 30 seconds on boarded TV. Mm. And there's lots of little events like that that could do with just a little injection of cash just to get the in their particular magazines, you know, mountain biking or whatever it is, just a little injection like that. Peel Boat Weekend, that attracts a few people. All these little things can do with targeting the right amount, not big amounts of money, but just the right amount to trigger tourism.
This year we had a fantastic success with the start of Cycle Fest. Mm. I just think innovating, brilliant events that are absolutely right for the Isle of Man and its environs, that's the way forward.
Well, are these things successful in spite of government or because government? Well, what do you think? What would you say, Andrew?
In spite of government? Mm. Well, I think that the businesses that are in tourism are going to try to actually carry on just being in business, and they're functioning and they're bringing people here. But what I really mean about tourism is that when the people come to visit their island, lots are going to be business people. They're going to be wealthy, perhaps, or even just affluent. And they may well move here to, well, some might move here to retire, others may well bring business here, and that's when they see a business premises and they can develop. It's a showcase of what we've got, and that's why I like the idea of a clean, vibrant promenade. But we've got to get that out of season as well, because the hotels, they might do very well through the summer, but there's reduced capacity for them to survive.
But that's always been so.
Well, very much so, but of course the season is shorter because it is really school holidays, and we need to develop, and that's where the cycling needs to be looked at. I think fishing, somebody mentioned, there's fish. Our harbours, there's no shame in having very modern and vibrant harbours if we're an island. Well, we are an island nation, but we don't see big sort of flotillas of travelling sailing clubs. Certainly we don't see air pilots coming in, small pilots coming in day flyouts.
Well, we are looking forward, or if that's the right word to use, to the United Kingdom leaving the European Union. This hideous word Brexit is about all the time. But it's going to affect the Isle of Man. Our Protocol 3 arrangement, which goes back to the Treaty of Rome, will die with it. And we've got to do something about it. Now, Daphne, you've raised this in your manifesto quite clearly. What should we be doing, and when should we be doing it?
We should be doing a lot, and immediately, and continuing through the future. We know that the British government didn't seem to have the plan ready for the day after Brexit succeeded. That seems to have been pretty well promoted. The Isle of Man has to be having the conversations with the business leaders in the UK and in Europe and the British Irish Council and our other allies, such as the Channel Islands. We need to work together because we don't want the Isle of Man to be forgotten when those negotiations are going forward. The Protocol 3 arrangement is critical for our trade in agriculture, fisheries and manufactured goods. We need the new agreement to start with no transition. We need it on day one, and that's why we need to know that the both political level and officer level are having those conversations.
But when Protocol 3 was originated and the Isle of Man got its deal, there were what, 6 members of the European Union? Look how many there are now to negotiate with. Is this actually practical, do you think, Martin?
Well, I've got a feeling that we should look at places like Norway that are associate members, a bit like we are in the moment, and go back to our Viking roots and talk to people like that. It's essential that we understand exactly the implications it's going to have on our laws, because I think that's one of the first starting points. Laws are going to be totally different, and we probably will have to revamp quite a lot of it. But we need to go out farther afield. We've got South Africans here, we've got Hong Kong people, we've got the North American Manx Association. All those contacts we must make use of and spread, go and see what we can do to top up our economy from there.
Yes, but free movement of people and goods is fundamental of Protocol 3, and no tariff barriers. Now, the way things are going, we'll face both of those.
We will.
What do we do?
The main thing is that obviously the Article 50 hasn't even been invoked yet, and the UK have not even suggested a date when that might be. The additional thing is that the actual process could take up to 10 years. Now, the thing is, I believe that we haven't got, obviously, time to wait for the UK to act on our behalf, because anything that they may do on our behalf is just like us being on their coattails, which is not ideal for the Isle of Man. Now, previously, we have acted on our own volition, and we have gained our own trade agreements in financial services, and there's no reason to say that we cannot do that continuing, acting on our own volition, as I've said. In addition to that, yes, utilise our contacts at both political and officer level in the UK government. Yes, the British Irish Council, Channel Islands, whatever else you may say, but please be under no illusion that if we're around the table with any of those and there's business to be had, we will still have to fight for it. We will not be freely offered it.
Well, how do we do that? Because most of these people, and certainly in other countries, they don't like to deal with a mid-ranking or junior official. They like to press the flesh of the fellow who's the minister or at the top of the heap. And do we, because it's such a large job and there's so many other demands on ministers when they get into government, is it now time for a Minister of International Affairs or an external, whatever title you want to give them?
I suggest that in my manifesto, but that would be up to the Chief Minister of the day, and I think it depends. This time we have seen the Chief Minister take the stage very much on the international stage and take the lead, but perhaps domestically that hasn't been as strong a leadership, and it would be for the new Chief Minister to decide if his focus was domestically. I still think, even if it is the Chief Minister, that yes, quite often, particularly the Eastern China nations, they want the top man. Mm. So I think whoever it is, it's going to have to be the Chief Minister. But because the next 5 years is going to be critical for trading arrangements of the future, that perhaps there needs to be a focus on international affairs.
But there is a precedent. Other countries, America's one, who have a non-member of the government acting in these roles. Would you agree to that, Andrew? Would you think that perhaps it's now time that we bring in outside skills and help from not just within our own civil service and within their own political structure, but skills that are here in our society and make better use of them?
Well, certainly, yeah. I mean, we've got to look at it, but it's the costs of this. If we're going to employ outside companies to do that,
I didn't say companies; I said individuals.
Individuals. Mm. Mm. So they're going to come in and work for the government. Well, yeah. I think we've already. There was a briefing that was for candidates a couple of weeks ago, and it was intriguing because it was a briefing about Brexit, and we found out that there was already a group of people in our government that's already liaising with certainly London, and they seem to be putting all their eggs in that basket. I found it equally intriguing that just to stray from this, that the Chief Minister criticised candidates for not having passion and drive and a 10-year plan, and then you go to a briefing on two subjects, which is Brexit and pensions, and they were equally as vague on a 10-year plan. So I sort of took a small amount of exception to that. But there is something, exactly what, we don't know. And there seems to be a lot of, we don't know when, we don't know how, we don't know if. And having that until we, and I think to negotiate with another outside country, we may well do ourselves a disservice. We have to find.
What do you mean by another outside country?
Well, I think that's what, for instance, Ireland. We might do a bilateral, if it's a Norwegian thing that you were talking about. And but
there's no harm in having friends, is there?
Well, we need as many friends as we can get. Yeah,
but on that subject about the business leaders and harnessing the experience and expertise that we have in the community, I think that perhaps the next administration could look at the recommendation from Lord Lisvain on that, because he suggests that people from all parts of the community could be nominated to serve in the Legislative Council, and that these people wouldn't necessarily take an official role in the government, but if you had perhaps top lawyers who are still working in the top law firms, top accountants, entrepreneurs who could be nominated and perhaps take a seat on the Legislative Council, then the government could harness that goodwill and expertise for the benefit of the Isle of Man.
When you say nominated, do you mean elected by the public or just nominated by the old cronies?
Lord Lisvain suggests that it goes to a nominations committee, but or a nomination commission, but even in the system as it is now, instead of being the old politicians that mainly get nominated to the upper house, it would be nice if it was people working at the top of their game in all aspects of the community, and that could be from farming to entrepreneurs.
Yeah. Well, we've had that in the, this is the annoying thing. We've had that in the past. We've had cross-sector working parties, working with Treasury, working with government from all the various business sectors. So, and freely giving of their opinion
and
advice.
You're using the past tense there. We've had. Does that mean we haven't got them now?
I don't think we have anymore, no. They are not operating anymore. And we had this situation where every quarter we would have meetings to dissect what was happening, what may happen, and this was coming from the people at the coalface, cutting edge, in the lawyers, accountants, all business aspects, and they all used to feed into that, and we then had a cohesive plan moving forward.
But well, instead of having them in operating as committees, why not have key people who Tim Wald appoints, or the Keys appoint, to the Legislative Council, so they are part of the system, and if the upper chamber became more of the revising and scrutiny chamber that it was meant to do, they wouldn't necessarily have involvement on the day-to-day running of government, but they would be there as very exceptional figureheads for international affairs, for negotiating our future agreements post-Brexit, or with whatever.
Yeah, the only difference with that is there's a cost to your argument and there's no cost to mine.
There isn't a cost, because they would be taking the seats in a Legislative Council that would be full. No, they would get the Legislative Council remuneration, but they would be doing the job of revision and scrutiny of legislation. But it would be a drop in the ocean compared with the salary earning potential of these candidates.
Now, no doubt we could discuss an even wider range of topics, but we've run out of time. And all that remains for me to do is to ask all of you to tell us why you believe that the voters of Garth should invest one of their two votes in you. So we'll go around the table in alphabetical order, reverse alphabetical order this time, beginning with Andrew Smith, please.
Well, I believe I'm competent, conscientious and caring, with a dedication, passion and resolve to assist our island nation and its resilient people work towards a brighter hope for the future.
Right, thank you, Andrew. Martin Perkins, please.
If I'm honoured to be elected on the 22nd, I'll do my best to work with the other MHKs to give all the people of Garth and the Isle of Man the representation they deserve. I will try and engender a sense of urgency, teamwork and some fresh industrial thinking to take the Isle of Man forward and make it a fit place for future generations.
Now, Nigel Dobson isn't with us, but he's left his recorded comments.
I have spent 20 years on this island, much of it doing public service and charitable work. I'd now like to do some real work to make life better for all of us. From day one, for the next 5 years, I will work hard for you.
And from Nigel Dobson, Daphne Kane, please.
I have spent all my working life on the Isle of Man. I love the island and I want to ensure its future success. I realise there are massive challenges ahead and that the next administration will have to face them, but I'm ready to tackle them and to be part of the solution if the people of Garth would elect me on the 22nd of September.
And Andrew Barton.
Well, I ask for the vote and pledge to you that if you give me that vote, I will strive to make Garth and the Isle of Man a better place to live and work, and vibrant and economically sound. And I've got many, many ideas, and I'd like to invite you to visit andrewbarton.me to find out everything you can.
Well, thank you all for joining us for this another of our debates this evening. No doubt that it'll continue in the constituency for a while yet, up to polling day. We wish you all the best of luck. In today's 2016 election debate, we met the candidates for Gough. Next in the series will be tomorrow, when Beth Espy is in the chair and we head for Glenfaber and Peel. I'm Roger Watterson. Goodbye.